to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 26, 2021. Kenya introduces a visa waiver for South Sudanese nationals entering the country.
Visas have to be waived so that it gives rooms for our people to be moving. And thank God, this is now coming the reality. We received it this morning, and we just forwarded to the headquarters.
And family members of a South Sudanese journalist who was detained recently in Juba say he needs urgent medical attention.
We are going to take him to the hospital, as there was a recommendation from a doctor that Alfred should not stay in cold places, dusty places, and there are specific foods that he should not eat.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Kenyan government has waived a visa requirement for South Sudanese nationals with valid passports who want to visit Kenya. A press release issued by the Kenyan Ministry of Foreign Affairs stated that South Sudanese will not need a visa for entering Kenya with effect from July 26, 2021. The ambassador of South Sudan to Kenya, Chol Ajongo, says the move is a relief to thousands of South Sudanese families living in Kenya for various reasons. Ambassador Ajongo says his country is finally benefiting from being a member of the East African community.
This is something that we have been engaging our colleagues in the foreign minister from some time now, that as part of the normal East African call for people's movement and freedom of movements within the bloc, that visas have to be waived so that it gives rooms for our people to be moving. And thank God, this is now coming the reality. We received it this morning, and we just forwarded to the headquarters. Of course, you know, when you talk of freedom of movement and visa waiving, it comes as a result of course, diplomatic engagement, but also it has to be reciprocity. You know, if we don't expect this thing to hold, unless also our government apply the same on Kenyan citizens who will be coming to South Sudan, you would also expect to waive visas for them. Otherwise, it will fall back.
Ambassador Ajongo, this is a bitter, sweet news. Bitter in a sense that Kenyans traveling to South Sudan will no longer come to the South Sudan embassy in Nairobi to pay for visa fees. And it's an open secret that some embassies, some South Sudanese embassies, depend on money collected from visas for their mainstay.
Look at the bigger picture of what we get out of this. Yes, there are collection, of course, in embassies, that it generates money, but also with the people moving from across the board, across borders, South Sudanese and Kenyans. And by the way, one of the dimension also we are trying to consider is that probably by doing this, then we need also to waive, to make sure that at least our people have work permits in both countries. You know, if you know that very well, most of the things that we are now seeing, actually Kenyans are the one more or less working in South Sudan, where you don't find actually South Sudanese working here. So this is something that we've been pushing forward. So yes, there are collections being made. But when you look at the bigger pictures of South Sudan's movement, you know, the bigger goal would be much better than the little collections we are getting to sustain embassies. It's just a fraction from what we'll be getting in terms of easiness of movement from our people, families that will be coming to this country, but they don't have, you know, much to pay for the visas. So at least, instead of trying to look at it from that small angle of collection for embassies, I think the common good for quite a number of South Sudanese getting access to Kenya when they are sick, when they are coming to see their families, when they are coming to see their children, given the constraint financially, I think we are much better having it, you know, the way it is than actually looking at the collection aspect of the little money we collect and generate and sustain us, because as an embassy, but we are sustaining a bigger number of people, which is much, much greater than the collections when you look at it from economic perspective.
Talking about the bigger picture and the good of the public, you and I are aware that there are people in South Sudan who think there are no jobs because foreigners have taken them up. What is the guarantee that this new development will not trigger a xenophobic reaction towards Kenyans who might want to take this opportunity and go to South Sudan and look for a job?
You know, that could be a bigger debate. But as we speak now, I will have to confine myself in the fact that Kenyans are waived and also South Sudanese are expected to do the same as principles of reciprocity. But, you know, looking at the bigger picture, as again, when it comes to work, I think immigration is something that is happening across the globe. But it depends on the country now, how you frame your laws, even type of job that will be taken by foreigners. I don't think it's going to be an open thing that where a Kenyan would walk to South Sudan and tomorrow you see them as medical doctors or lawyers doing law practicing in the market. But I think the market effect is just labor in the normal market. But if our people are to compete, really nobody would be having a problem to compete with Kenyans. But if you streamline the type of jobs that are to be taken by the foreigners, which is common practice in most of the countries in the world, including the West, then you are fine. But if you just sit and you think, okay, cleaning job, for example, you don't want to do it yourself, and then when a Kenyan picks it up, it becomes a problem, then we have a problem there. I think this is just what I could say regarding the talk about the, and also being part of the community. These are some of the obligations that comes with it. You know, I think South Sudan has sent it to the East African community. East African community also has all its rules. Even this waiving visas, it's quoting certain provisions in the constitutive act of the East African community. So these are some of the things that comes with it. You know, joining or being part of the community, small or big, has its obligations and also it has rights. So you look at both pictures and then you decide as a country, as a sovereign, you join. It comes at a cost. There are things that you pay. There are things that, of course, you subtract, things that you gain. So I think the discussion will be along what kind of jobs that will be made available. Of course, even when South Sudanese come to Kenya, they won't be taking all the jobs, of course. Certain jobs will be protected by certain regulations and certain legal requirements. But if you talk of the open market, cleaning job, construction job, and those things, I think people have to compete. That's what it means to be part of a bigger community.
As the South Sudanese envoy to Kenya, what can you tell your countrymen who want to take the advantage of the visa waiver and migrate to Kenya because of the difficult conditions in South Sudan? I mean, I lived in Kenya for many years, and life in Nairobi can be very challenging.
No, yes. I mean, you know, again, it comes back to simple, Brother John. Home is home, okay? The good thing, Kenyans, South Sudanese are exposed to Kenya, and a number of people who have been in Kenya, they are back in South Sudan, they fully understand the type of life here. You can make it unless you are doing a really decent job here. And of course, even market is very competitive. You know, Kenya with the highest number of educated class, you know, on the street. So it wouldn't be like a fun to come move to Kenya and you expect to live normally. So either you have what it takes to be here. From our engagement, we suggest at some point that we would come up with something like, say, South Sudan Kenya Business Council or Business Forum, where some South Sudanese who have little money can identify certain or investment opportunities in Kenya so that they invest. I'm also in mind, you know, because we had a huge number of our mothers here, girls and mothers who are taking care of the children. Some of them have skill, but because of the nature of the, you know, they're here with the kids, they can't do anything. But with this kind of thing, if they are to open up permits, work permits, they can come up with a few businesses, coiffure, whatever it is. You know, you can have a small shop next to a kushuk next to the house where you live or in the market where you can sell dry okra or full madgook, something along those lines, so that at least you keep them engaged. And of course, there are South Sudanese who will be buying from you. Or as we speak now, that one is not possible. So if we do that, at least we will also create certain jobs for those who are here, our mothers who are here, taking care of their children, to be doing something that actually can generate little fund for them to sustain them.
That's Chol Ajongo, South Sudanese ambassador to Kenya. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. From Nairobi, we move to Juba, where a Juba-based analyst says SPLM's nominated Speaker of the Reconstituted Parliament, Nunu Jema Kumba, could face challenges in running the affairs of the parliament. James Okuk says the Speaker's performance will depend on the heads of various committees in the parliament. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has more from Juba.
James Okuk
A senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies says the nomination of Gemma Nunukumba as Speaker of Parliament was in line with the provisions of the Revitalized Peace Agreement, but only one name was put forth in the nominating process.
Normally, the internal democracy will require that a number of candidates be presented. Then, after that, people who are tasked with the selection can now choose the best among the candidates. This has not happened. What we saw is that some lobbies met somewhere, they strategized, and then they came and made the announcement, and everybody claps, and that was the end of the nomination. That's not democracy, and that's what we are saying. There are doubts whether members have really exercised their democratic right to select her.
Okuk says if the public holds a performance audit of Kumba, he will not be surprised if it finds that she has not accomplished much while holding some key government positions, including governor of Western Equatoria State. Okuk says her performance as Speaker of Parliament will depend on how well she works with committee members.
That will depend on the committees that will be appointed to work with her on the parliamentary governance. So if she gets good head of committees, I think she would be on the safe side, and her performance would be enhanced. But if she failed to get good committees, which have to be nominated also by other parties to the agreement, then she would have to face some challenges, because it's the first time for her to have experience of being a speaker in the parliament.
Okuk says he does not rule out the reconstituted parliament becoming a rubber stamp for the interests of some executive, given that Kumba was appointed by senior members of the executive. Jacob Chol, a professor of political science at the University of Juba, says it's exciting that the parliament now has a female speaker for the first time in history. However, he doubts Kumba will be able to perform to expectations, claiming she lacks managerial skills.
So the first thing that would tell Nunu will be even managing parliament, managing the debating procedures. How do you ensure that the other MPs sit down, the other one, the order had to be put in place? How do you make sure that the other one doesn't shout? How do you make sure that the parliament is actually relaxed? You know, that is a challenge that she'll face, because she doesn't have the guard. She doesn't have the guard to control. She doesn't have that controlling guard. She has a guard of talking, but doesn't have command. Nunu doesn't have command. She will not command the parliament.
Charles says some people are brought in because they simply want to be MPs, but they are illiterate. Others are former soldiers who are not familiar with the history of political culture, while other MPs have been in power for a while and are used to having their way. He says it will be very hard for Kumba to unite all of these different lawmakers. Chol also says in years past, the speakership position has been dependent on the executive, something he says will make it difficult for Kumba to succeed on her own.
The assembly has been always, rather coming from the executive. So that is a challenge. That is a challenge that need to be observed by people like Nunukumba, because it's not going to be a walk in the park. She has to got it right by making sure that she tries to be independent as much as possible.
Chol says Kumba should thoroughly reflect on how previous speakers have performed in order to make effective changes in parliament. He urges Kumba to work as Speaker of Parliament in the National Unity Government, not as a ruling SPLM party member. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Still in Juba, the family of a South Sudanese journalist who was released from detention over the weekend say they are concerned about his health. Family members say Alfred Angasi Dominic was picked from his office by the National Security Service, who detained him for more than 2 weeks. His sister says her brother's health condition has become worse over the past few days. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Journalist Alfred Angasi Dominic, a news anchor at the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation, was arrested July 4. He was released on Saturday. Cecilia Edward Dominic says her brother was arrested by a national security agent for allegedly refusing to anchor the news containing presidential decree, something she says was an administrative issue. Dominic says family members are happy that her brother was released but are worried about his health. She says Dominic had been battling tuberculosis before he was detained, and now his condition has worsened.
We are going to take him to the hospital, as there was a recommendation from a doctor that Alfred should not stay in cold places, dusty places, and there are specific foods that he should not eat. But in prison, you don't have a choice. You must do anything. His health is not good, and he's even complaining of general body pain. We asked him if he has been tortured, but he said that he has not been tortured inside the prison.
Patrick Oye, chairperson of the South Sudan Union of Journalists, says Dominic's release might serve as a learning experience to all journalists across the country. In the past 2 weeks, the Journalists Union, the South Sudan Media Authority, and the Association for Media Development in South Sudan all expressed concern over Dominic's detention. Oyet says the Union of Journalists is happy Dominic was freed and look forward to better working relations with security organizations across the country.
We hope that going forward we will have, you know, better cooperation with authorities and better working relationship between journalists and the authorities. We have been informed that he was not feeling well even when he was arrested. Actually, he was on medication. And due to the arrest, there was a kind of a halt to the medication because the medication, of course, he did not take with him. And of course, that is a concern.
Oyet says union members will visit Alfred over the next few days to see how he is doing. Josephine Achiro, Secretary General of Association for Media Development in South Sudan, condemned Dominic detention by the National Security Service and blame administrators with the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation for allowing Dominic to be detained over an issue which was supposed to be resolved within SSBC management. Achiro called on managers of media houses to protect their journalists.
We condemn this in a very strong term that this should not repeat itself. And national security or the security authority, you know, all the authority in this country, they should understand that journalists are not there representing themselves. They are there for the voice of voiceless. For God's sake, SSBC is a government-owned media house. If they are on sand, they are taking in, what do they want us to understand? So this is really very bad.
South Sudan National Security Services spokesperson John Kumuri told South Sudan in Focus that he was not aware of any journalist being detained by national security agent.
Up to now, I have no information that the national security have detained this journalist, but I will find out, then I will get back to you. My department, especially my department, did not receive such information still from the leadership. But as soon as I consult together with the other message, I will get back to the media houses on.
According to Reporters Without Borders 2019, Global Press Freedom Index places South Sudan rank number 139 out of 180 countries. Since independence in 2011, hundreds of reporters have been subjected to intimidation, arrest, censorship, and violence across the country. The Media Authority Act 213 prohibits the unlawful arrest, detention, intimidation, and torture of journalists. But according to the rights group, dozens of reporters have been subjected to intimidation, arrest, censorship, and violence. Achiro says, based on Dominic's salary as a government employee, he might not be able to afford proper medical care for his condition. Achiro is urging Dominic's colleagues and other organizations that deals in trauma to help Dominic recover from this experience. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how are African countries fighting COVID-19? That story is coming up right after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you advise someone who is struggling in life?
To just keep going, eh? Life is full of ups and downs, eh? So it's the way you're able to maneuver, is the way you're able to, because life will give you what you accept. So if you are defeated and you feel you are defeated, then that's all.
He or she should not give up, because once you struggle, you never know, one time you can achieve what you want.
Not to give up so easily, because if you want to succeed in life and you give up on something that you want to do so easily, there is no way you can go forward and succeed in whatever you're doing.
I'll tell him not to watch his present situation now, but to still forge ahead and push towards his goal. He should also have a goal and then work towards it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Zimbabweans on Sunday received millions of Sinovac vaccine from China as the African country battles to meet the demand for the COVID-19 jabs. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabweans want to get vaccinated to beat the third wave facing the country.
After the arrival of the doses from China on Sunday, Finance Minister Muthuli Ncube told reporters that Zimbabwe had paid $92 million for 12 million jabs from China and from the COVAX, the United Nations Vaccine Sharing Initiative.
So our vaccination program and the vaccine acquisition program is going very well. For the first dose, already reaching about 50,000 vaccinations a day, which is good going indeed. So all is going well, and we feel that we're well on our way towards achieving that target of herd immunity, which we need in order to open the economy safely so that the recovery is sustained and we can move from strength to strength in line with our objectives.
In a virtual press conference this week, Dr. Matshidiso Moeti, the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa, said the continent was going through a third wave of COVID-19 infections and should urgently ramp up COVID-19 vaccination program.
Africa continues to lag behind, sadly. Yet Africa's supply crunch is starting to ease. The first delivery of doses donated by the United States government through the COVAX facility are arriving in Africa, and altogether nearly 60 million doses are expected in the coming weeks through COVAX from Team Europe, UK, purchased doses, and from other partners. African countries must go all out and speed up their vaccine rollouts by 5 to 6 times if they are to get all these doses into arms and fully vaccinate the most vulnerable 10% of their people by the end of September.
COVID-19 is the disease caused by the coronavirus. Slightly more than 1,400,000 Zimbabweans out of a population of 14 million have received their first shot, and nearly 680,000 have received their second inoculation since the program started in February. Nomeni Murwizi is one of the Zimbabweans who has yet to get a vaccine due to shortages.
My assumption would be the chances of me getting vaccinated would have increased due to the increased supply of the vaccines. My guess or wish would be the service rate would have improved so that the numbers could plummet and the chances of people getting vaccinated does increase. So the expectation actually increases of me getting a vaccine with no hassle at all, or with minimum fuss.
Zimbabwe turned down Johnson & Johnson vaccines, which the African Union sourced for its members with financing from the African Development Bank, but changed its mind. Zimbabwe has 97,277 confirmed corona infections and 3,050 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which is tracking the global outbreak. On Sunday, John Mangwiro, Zimbabwe's junior health minister, said with the arrival of 1 million jabs, the vaccination program would intensify. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We'd love to hear what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We now leave you with some traditional Acholi song. Listening to some traditional Acholi song. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.